Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the Matrix.
And you have joined Rod Bryant, me, and Jerry Gordon, my sidekick and co-producer of the show. Thank you so much for making Beyond the Matrix such an important part of your radio listening each week. And those of you that share the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for making it such a great success. Jerry, we have Ken Timmerman on, who is a familiar voice and one of the analysts that we like to bring on. We're going to be talking about Iran. We first, you and I want to say Happy Purim to the audience. Hope you have
enough. Chag Purim to everybody in our listener audience.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to have a great time on the show. We're going to be talking about Iran, which most people may or may not know that the tomb of Mordecai and Esther is in Iran.
Habadan, Iran.
Yes. Jerry, why don't you give a brief bio and then also explain that he's going to be appearing in Florida at a conference with you, correct?
Correct. Ken is an intrepid author, investigator, who's been on the scene in Iraq, in Israel during the cross-border wars with Hamas. And he was also a witness to the U.S. evacuating most of the nuclear technology that was given freely by the late Libyan strongman, Omar Gaddafi, back in 2004, which played an important role in the joint U.S.-Israeli attack on the Iranian enrichment program known as Stuxnet.
So if a person really wants to find out some details that are very, well, not very well known about Iran and Libya, you don't want to go miss this show. And Jerry, go ahead. You have about a minute.
Basically, Ken is appearing next week here in Pensacola, Florida, on Thursday, the 28th of March, at 7 p.m. at my synagogue, B'nai Israel, located at 1829 North 9th Avenue. He will be making an interesting slideshow presentation about many of the points in his intrepid journalistic career. And he will be answering questions from the audience.
Well, it's going to be a great time. And if you want more information about it, just email us, rod@israelnewstalkradio.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this short break.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Thanks for hanging around after the news break. You are listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Rod Bryant, along with my amazing co-host, Jerry Gordon. And we're bringing on a very familiar advisor and a person that we really trust his analytical mind on many things, Mr. Ken Timmerman. And we really appreciate you taking time to out of your busy schedule. Today is Purim, and we want to say Happy Purim to everyone that is listening today. And in the light of Purim, we're going to be talking about Iran. And just this morning in the pre-show warm-up, Jerry and I were talking about the tomb of Esther and Mordecai in Iran itself. Now, Ken, did you ever get a chance to see that yourself?
Well, you know, the Iranians have got a certain thing about me, and they have always promised that should I come to Iran, they will keep me for a very long time.
Oh.
And as a result of that, I think I'm going to put off my visit to the tomb.
Oh, okay.
Master,
so no,
and Mordecai.
No pilgrimages for you, right?
Yeah, not until after the revolution.
There you go. There you go. Well, while we're talking
I have been to the tomb of Nahum. In Al-Kush, on the other side of the border. And you might find it of interest that when ISIS came into Al-Kush in the summer of 2014, they got to the edge of the town. Somebody came up to them and said, "The Jews are here." And they turned away immediately. They were absolutely convinced that the mythical Jews were guarding the tomb of Nahum. And so they didn't take the town of Al-Kush.
Really?
True story.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
That's a great story.
That is amazing. I've never heard that story. That is fantastic. I mean,
so see, there is an occasion, probably the only one in history, where anti-Semitic slurs can actually protect Jews.
Well, you know, it sort of sounds like when they were taking the Temple Mount, and the story goes is that the soldiers there, Israeli soldiers, ran out of ammunition. And so a sergeant said, just shoot as much as you can, be careful, don't waste anything. And the Arabs down below the hill all of a sudden saw a man appear, which they swore it was Avraham, and they were so scared out of their mind they took off running. And that's a very popular story that's been told by the men that were there at the Temple Mount. So, you know, miracles happen. They happen in some amazing ways. But today, being Purim, and we're going to be talking about Iran, I would be remiss to not mention the fact that in some way Purim is still happening in the world. There's still anti-Semitism. Iran is still swaggering the banter to destroy Israel and to rout out the Jews out of the Holy Land. And yet we still have and we have anti-Semitism on the rise, even within our Congress. And yet there are more people than ever who are becoming more interested in Judaism and the state of Israel and the Christian support for Jews in Israel. It's a phenomenal time to be living in.
Yep.
It is amazing. And, you know, actually, Rod, my first book on the Middle East after 9/11, I'd written several before, but my first one after 9/11 was called Preachers of Hate, and it was the story of Muslim anti-Semitism and why Muslim anti-Semitism was absolutely critical to Islamic doctrine across the board. If you don't hate Jews, you can't be a Muslim. And so I went and did investigations, investigative book, not a polemical book. You can find it at my website, kentimmerman.com, called Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War in America. And it tells the story in the words of some of these Muslim clerics that I went around the world to interview, why they were convinced, number one, that the Jews carried out 9/11, right? It was all the Jews. And then it goes into the protocols of the elders of Zion and how it has been spread throughout the Islamic world by the KGB.
I wonder, and you did the research, I'm just wondering what the average Muslim would think. Do they actually think the same thing that these preachers of hate think?
Well, they're taught that by the preachers of hate. That's the thing.
Right,
that's why
right.
The mosque is so important, and why in this country, for example, it's important to ensure that anyone speaking in a mosque speaks in English, not in Arabic. In Gaza, for example, the Muslim clerics say one thing in Arabic, just like the Palestinian leaders do. They say one thing in Arabic and something completely different in English.
Mm-hmm.
So the French have insisted that in mosques in France they speak only French, because there they have no qualm about sending the French equivalent of the FBI, it's called the DST, about sending the DST into mosques undercover listen to what they are actually preaching. They are preaching it in the mosques today.
And in fact, they're also preaching the new line, which is up on memory yesterday. They're preaching essentially the fact that the Jews were behind the massacre essentially in New Zealand.
Right. That's the new one.
Yes, it's all of a piece. The Jews are behind every evil in the world, according to Islam. It's the Jews who did it. They have a plan. They control the media. They control the banks, yada, yada, yada. It goes on and on. And I remember talking to one Hamas guy in Gaza a number of years ago, and he said, oh, yes, I have my copy right here. And oh, he went and got out a copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion in Arabic from his bookcase.
Interesting.
Jerry? Well, let us go into the heart of the evil kingdom and talk about what's going on, Ken. Iran's President Rouhani and a huge entourage went to Baghdad last week. Ostensibly, it was about cutting trade deals. Was it really about a possible takeover of Iraq and completion of the Shia land bridge to the Mediterranean via Syria and Lebanon?
Well, I hate to disappoint you, Jerry, but yes, it was about trade deals because Iran has already taken over Iraq. They already own Iraq. He didn't need to go there to take over Iraq. He's already done it. They have Iranian nationals in senior positions in every single cabinet office in Iraq today, and they've had them there for a number of years. Ever since the U.S. pulled out militarily and pulled out our intelligence assets under Obama from Iraq, the Iranians have taken over the country lock, stock, and barrel. Mm. They now have, you mentioned the land bridge, they have over 100,000 men in arms in Iraq who are pledging their loyalty not to the Iraqi government, this is the Hashd al-Shaabi, right, the popular forces, yep, militia, not to the government of Iraq, but they're pledging their loyalty to Ayatollah Khamenei. Mm. I was in Iraq recently at the end of October in Mosul and in the Nineveh plain. We talked about this on air here. But one of the most remarkable things was to see at the entry to Christian towns, Assyrian Christian towns such as Bartella in the Nineveh plain, you would see these gigantic banners of Hussein, Yah Hussein, you know, the martyr figure of Shiite Islam. And you would have banners proclaiming loyalty to Ayatollah Khamenei as well. So the Iranians now effectively control the government of Iraq. They have 100,000 troops there. And yes, they have a land bridge that goes from Iran through Iraq into Syria, into Lebanon, right on the border with Israel. And they have been trying to get into the Golan Heights.
I have a follow-up to that. The follow-up would be, how sustainable is this? And do you think it's going to be a long-term power that is being established in the region, or is in essence Iran's on the sort of the short string of an economic collapse, and how can they sustain this?
Well, I don't have to tell you guys how the Middle East works. Mm-hmm. It works by power,
right?
The strong horse, and right now Iran is the strong horse, and until somebody knocks them off their strong horse, they will continue to do what they are doing. They will continue to occupy Iraq. They will continue to operate inside Syria militarily as well as other ways. Now, the Israelis have tried very hard to bomb them away from the border with Israel. And they've been pretty successful at that. My understanding is they have actually pushed back Iran's military bases from the border region with Israel, mm-hmm, in Syria, and push them back, you know, anywhere from 60 kilometers or more, which is, by the way, what they had asked the Russians to do for them without having to bomb, and Putin said not going to do it or can't do it. It's unclear exactly what his answer was. I can't do it or I won't do it, but he didn't do it. And so the Israeli Defense Force, the Air Force, did it for them.
So in essence, when the U.S. pulled out, when Obama pulled out all of the intel gathering capabilities and a lot of the military boots on the ground, that was the tactical mistake that we made.
It was a huge, huge error. It was a predictable error. Look,
of course, the generals tried to tell him that.
Right. I have a lot of contacts in the special operations community, and this is what my guys tell me is that, you know, for Syria, for example, we understand that President Trump wants to pull out of Syria. He's right. Of course, we should be pulling out of Syria. But we need to keep some footprint there for intelligence gathering purposes. The same goes with Iraq. We need to have enough people on the ground to gather intelligence to keep so we have eyes and ears on the bad guys. We can't do that remotely. We have to be there talking to Joes on the ground or talking to Mohammeds on the ground.
Absolutely. So look, we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I would like to talk about Iran-controlled Iraqi Shiite militia leaders who fought the U.S. during the Gulf War, and talking about the 5,500 troops in Anbar province, and what kind of threat are we looking at that. So don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages here on Israel News Talk Radio.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things. But at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Yes, we are back here on Israel News Talk Radio, Beyond the Matrix. I hope you've been enjoying the show. We have Ken Timmerman on with us, and of course, my amazing sidekick and co-host and producer of the show, Jerry the G-Man Gordon.
Ken, we last were talking about, but didn't discuss, what about those 5,500 U.S. troops at Al Asad Air Base in Anbar province? What are they going to do?
Well, most likely they are going to remain. Some of the troops that are coming out of Syria are going to be relocated into Anbar province, either that air base or other positions, because we do need to have people on the ground to gather intelligence. And by the way, when they say we're going to be pulling out of Syria, that's just a hop, skip, and a jump from the most critical areas of Syria. Remember, the last battle with ISIS that's going on as we speak is right at the border at Al-Qaim. By the way, Al-Qaim is the opening scene of my book about Iraq and the Iraqi Christians, ISIS Begins. And it takes place. So ISIS begins in Al-Qaim and ISIS dies in Al-Qaim. And that's why those U.S. soldiers need to be close by to watch that Sunni heartland in Anbar province.
Also, I think people rarely know or understand that we also have a tremendous amount of support system in Jordan with the air bases there.
Well, that's true as well. The Jordanians don't like to trumpet it so much.
Right.
Yes, there is extensive intelligence cooperation, military cooperation with the Jordanians. I can remember a number of years ago visiting the headquarters at that point newly built of Jordanian intelligence outside of Amman to meet with the deputy director. And of course, as we learned, the whole 400 million complex had been bought, paid for, and built by U.S. taxpayers, or with U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Yes.
Is that absolutely effectively going to be a replacement for the infamous NATO base at Sirlik in Turkey?
Well, I don't know, Jerry. You know, I have been advocating for a number of years that we should get out of Incirlik, that Turkey has no business in NATO any longer. It has disqualified itself by its actions and by the actions of Erdogan from being called a NATO ally. Remember, during the so-called coup in 2016, July of 2016, Turkish Interior Ministry forces surrounded Incirlik Air Force Base, quarantined something like 2,000.
It was a very tense moment.
It was. 2,200 Americans, and including, I think, some family members on the base, quarantined them, surrounded them, prevented them from leaving or going anywhere. And Turkey has regularly forbidden us from using that base to launch attacks against whoever might be their allies of the day. Sometimes Al-Qaeda, sometimes Al-Nusra, sometimes ISIS, and before that, Saddam Hussein. Turkey is a truly questionable ally. I really don't think you can say Turkey an ally in the same sentence and remain an honest person.
I agree.
Totally. Speaking about Turkey and Iran, they've announced joint operations to allegedly attack the PKK forces in northern Iraq. Is that really about the PKK, or is it really an attack on Iranian Kurdish resistance? And could it be a prelude to actions against the Syrian Kurds?
All of the above, Jerry. I've been on the ground when they have conducted these operations in the past with the Iranian Kurds in the Kandil Mountains. Those are the 13,000 foot peaks that form the entire northwestern border of Iraq with northeastern border, excuse me, with Iran. So these are the mountains on the border between Iraq and Iran, and it's where the Kurds have their bases. And what's interesting is that the Iranians and the Turks will operate against two very, very distinct geographical parts of the Kandil Mountains, hundreds of kilometers away from each other, and yet they will coordinate their operations because they believe that the PKK coordinates all this, all of the Kurds as well. They don't. The Iranian Kurds, sure, they're friends with the Turkish Kurds, the PKK, but as I say, they have very completely separate bases, hundreds of kilometers on dirt roads. And I've been on those dirt roads in the back of a pickup, and believe me, you know, ain't so good for your lower back after an hour or so. You can feel it. And that was when I was a younger man than I am today. But I can tell you it's a very, very different part of the country. So they coordinate. They launch joint attacks, both mortar attacks and aircraft, sometimes helicopter with airborne assault troops as well, to whack the Kurds. Under the guise of hitting the PKK, but you're right. They're going after Iranian Kurdish freedom fighters whose real fight is against the regime in Tehran.
Speaking about the Turks, there was an interesting document reported on by the Euro-Observer this past week, which confirmed to many of us that what Erdogan perpetrated in July of 2016 was in fact a faked coup. What's your observation?
Well, it's interesting to see this come to light. You know, these are the real-time notes of one of Erdogan's top advisors that shows that, you know, there was coordination. We knew at the time that the Russians had tipped off Erdogan where he was on vacation and helped him escape from that hotel hours before the Turkish army assaulted it. We also know that this was a real how can I say this politely? It was not a very professional coup. They started at 10 o'clock at night when people were still out on the streets and in restaurants instead of doing it 2 in the morning, which is what previous military coups had done. And they allowed Erdogan, they gave Erdogan the time to rally his people, rally his troops, so to speak, popular forces, to oppose the military coup as it went on. So either this was very cleverly orchestrated by Erdogan, or it was very quickly co-opted by Erdogan. That is hard fact. We know that without any doubt whatsoever. The result is the same. He has used the coup systematically as an excuse to crack down on people he considered to be his opponents, supporters of Fethullah Gulen, his former ally, an Islamist just as he is, but they had a falling out over power sharing. So one Islamist goes after another Islamist, purges Gulen's supporters from the justice ministry, from the police force, from the armed forces, even from teaching in schools and universities. So he's used it as an excuse ever since.
Israel revealed here just lately about a Hezbollah operation threatening the Golan frontier. And the operation was against a person who was an operative who had been convicted by killing 5 U.S. soldiers during the Iraq War. Who is this guy, and why is Israel acting against this Iranian-backed terror base in the northern frontier?
Well, I think you're talking about Sheikh Akram al-Kabi,
yes,
who's the head of al-Nujaba. And al-Nujaba is one of these Iranian-backed militias in Iraq with the Iraqi Shiite fighters. They have two others that use the name Hezbollah as well, and they are also on the ground there. But al-Nujba is a, you know, they were involved in the earlier fight against the U.S. Mm-hmm. In 2007, 2008, before and during the surge. And this guy, al-Kabi, the sheikh who leads al-Nujba, has been openly photographed with Iranian leaders, with mm-hmm. Qasem Soleimani and other Iranians. So we know that he is completely trained, equipped, and supported by the Quds Force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps. And I must say, it seems to me an extraordinary coincidence that al-Nujba would be put on the U.S. terrorism list last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, very recently, had not been put there before. Mm-hmm. I find it an extraordinary coincidence this would happen just as the U.S. is trying to find more ways of putting pressure on the Iranian regime and trying to find ways of loosening their stranglehold on Iraq.
Mm. Wow.
Last week, the U.S. State Department released its annual human rights report, indicating the Trump administration is recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan. This followed a meeting on the Golan between U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham and Israeli PM Netanyahu. Is this likely to eventuate in formal recognition by the U.S. of Israel's control over the strategic Golan Heights?
Well, I think the U.S. has already recognized Israel's control. The question now is Israeli sovereignty. And that I can't tell you. You'd have to look in a crystal ball with me, and we can separate the clouds and the fairy dust and the snowflakes to find Mike Pompeo and Donald Trump sitting there smiling in the middle with Benjamin Netanyahu. I think the three of them are on the same page. Mm-hmm. And if the Israeli government wants U.S. support for that, I think that they will get it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I have the feeling that a lot of things that are being worked out that have gotten some criticism, for example, in this new peace deal of splitting the whole area in Jerusalem, that raised some eyebrows. It seems that there is a much more of a tactical approach to this, a strategic approach to this peace deal that we don't quite understand, but they're working. They seem to be working well together in that. Do you agree?
Well, I think so. And the strategy behind it, I think, is pretty clear. Is how do you show the utter fecklessness and fecklessness mm-hmm. of the Palestinian leadership? You offer them a deal that gives them a part of Jerusalem as their capital. Once again, they're going to reject it.
Right.
Well, Arafat did that in 2000, and Abbas is going to do it again today. I mean, we know that. It's in the cards. Everybody can see that. But the bigger strategic piece of this, and that's why it is very clever, is that it shows both the U.S. and the Israeli goodwill towards finding
right.
an accommodation, their willingness to compromise. And who are they showing it to? They're showing it to the Saudis, to the Emiratis, to the Kuwaitis, to the Arab world
right.
writ large.
And it's going to have a big payback, I believe.
Right, and they're splitting off the Arab world writ
okay, we're going to have to go
from this corrupt Palestinian
regime. We're going to have to go right back.
The rational thought and common sense has disappeared. One man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We've been talking to Ken Timmerman, and I'm Rod Bryant, along with Jerry Gordon. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix. Thank you so much for making this show what it is. And we're going to get right to the questions. Jerry, let's go ahead and wrap up with our final final focus on the question, and then we want to also seed some information about some upcoming work or memoir that Ken is going to be working on. So, Jerry, go ahead.
Okay. Last Thursday, two Fajr rockets were launched towards Tel Aviv, prompting a massive IAF raid on 100 targets against Hamas and the PIJ. Was the Iran-supplied Palestinian Islamic Jihad the real culprit here rather than Hamas? And what does this say about a demonstration of Iran's lasso strategy threatening Israel?
Well, it's what they tried in 2006, at that point, successfully. Iranians prompted Hamas to first there was fighting along the border between Gaza and Israel in the hopes that Israel would then, if not invade Gaza, at least, you know, get preoccupied militarily with Gaza. Meanwhile, they snatched Israeli soldiers on the Lebanon border. Mm-hmm. So Israel has been very careful not to get suckered into this strategy again. I believe this is why Bibi did not order the military. He was criticized for this. Remember, he lost some of his government ministers. He was criticized for not ordering the military into Gaza at the same time he could see things building in Lebanon, in the Golan Heights, and in Syria. So PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, yes, they are in an Iranian front, but Hamas is also being supported by Iran. They're really just, they're two jokers in the deck. I mean, they're I don't know, it's the Queen of Hearts and the Queen of Diamonds.
Right.
They work together. They make a royal flush together, and they're working for the Iranians at all moments. I had a kind of interesting encounter with PIJ, which is not going to make it into this first volume of my memoir, which I've finished and should be out sometime next year. But it was in 1994, and I was going down to Gaza. It was right after the peace deal had been struck. Clinton was going to Jordan and Syria, and I kind of tagged along the presidential trip as a reporter to get into places I couldn't go, such as Syria. But I was in Gaza, and I remember there was a funeral ceremony for a PIJ so-called militant who had blown himself up in an attack on Israeli troops. And I was taken into a kind of back room, a garage, unlit garage in the middle of winter. It was damp. They had a twig fire. And they showed me this, they introduced me to this young man, and there was something wrong with him. He was sort of chanting things, and it would sound like he was chanting Quranic verses. His eyes were glazed over, and he couldn't really communicate. I tried to ask him questions, but he couldn't communicate directly. He was clearly in another world already. I found out the next day that he then got strapped up with a bomb and put on a bicycle and drove into an Israeli checkpoint near Gaza. Luckily, no Israelis were killed. He just wound up joining his maker down below. But that is PIJ. You know, they have it's a much smaller organization than Hamas is, but they are deadly.
Let me ask you something real quick as a side note. The guy's condition, was he that way because of narcotics, or was he that way because maybe he was, mentally challenged? What was going on, do you think?
He was not mentally challenged, I don't think so. He was talking about the Jews. There was bloodlust in his eyes. You could see it. You could sense it from his heart. He was being either indoctrinated or, you know, with a drug-induced indoctrination. But no, he was not mentally challenged.
Okay. I just often wonder who would actually strap on a bomb and do this. I mean, there'd have to be some serious indoctrination, if not drugs. But at the same time, I wondered at times, are they using mentally challenged people that really don't have cognitive ability to reason what's going on?
Yeah, but that doesn't work so well for them. If you're mentally challenged, you might forget to press the button at the right moment. Right?
Okay.
Using people who are ideologically driven, ideologically brainwashed. And Rod, this is not complicated. They start with these kids as soon as they learn how to talk.
Of course, before they learn how to talk.
They're feeding them this filth, and they're teaching them in the schools, and they're teaching them in the mosques. It comes with the mother's milk. How many videos have you seen at Memory and other places of Palestinian women who are not crying for their lost sons who have blown themselves up, but celebrating them. They have become a martyr. Yeah, he's a martyr. How wonderful it is. If only I had six more sons to give as martyrs to Allah. And this is stuff that you can see every day. It is not unusual. It's not out of the ordinary. It's what makes the Palestinian cause in particular so sick. And the use of Islam as a doctrine of jihad so deadly.
That is why yesterday in Israel on Samaria, we saw pictures of Palestinians exchanging sweets for the killings of an IDF soldier who was 19 and also a rabbi, Rabbi Ettinger, who had left behind 12 children.
Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, it's the old, unfortunately, it's a cliche, but it's so true. The Palestinians love death as much as Jewish Israelis and Christians love life.
Correct. What's the story that you were eyewitness to about the late Gaddafi's handing over to the U.S. his valued nuclear enrichment technology and its connection to Stuxnet? I wonder if you could enlighten our audience about that.
Well, I was in 2004. I went with Representative Kurt Weldon to Libya. I was the first non-government American allowed into Libya after the travel ban imposed by the State Department was lifted. And it was lifted because Gaddafi was starting to cooperate with the U.S. and Britain in handing over his nuclear weapons technology, his ballistic missiles as well. So I was there in March of 2004. Uncle Joe Biden joined us in Libya. That was a trip, but that's for a separate story. He made everybody laugh. You know, at that time, it was still the only two words in the English language guaranteed to make you laugh. Joe Biden. And he was there.
Oh, handy Joe Biden.
Yeah, with the stiff, Gaddafi. I got a great photograph someplace on my website of being with a stiff in Tripoli. But anyhow, Gaddafi, I was there when they actually put his centrifuges and some of his rockets on a U.S. freighter in the port of Tripoli. It was actually held up a couple of days because it was stormy. And then they sailed to the United States, installed the centrifuges in a secret laboratory at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, at one of our nuclear facilities at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And they recreated this Pakistani-supplied, AQCON-supplied centrifuge cascade, which was the same technology that the Iranians were using. So they could mimic an Iranian centrifuge uranium enrichment cascade and then figure out how to sabotage it. Now, Stuxnet, as you recall, was a joint Israeli NSA program. At least that is what we are told by leaks that have been reported by journalists in the meantime. And they were able to test out how to implant this virus into the Iranian uranium enrichment program. And it was very successful. They believe that the Iranians probably lost at least 1,000, perhaps 2,000 centrifuges because they'd speed them up way beyond their tolerances, then crash them down to almost nothing, and then speed them up again until they spun off their axis. And if you do that, if you have these centrifuges that are full of uranium gas spinning off their axis and exploding, it does not do very well for the nervous system of the Iranian nuclear scientists who are sitting behind those thin doors on the other side. You basically have a radioactive incident in addition to crashing their program. And that set them back for several years.
Wow. What was Gaddafi's fate something that sent a message to North Korea's dear leader, Kim Jong-un, at the summits he's had with Trump about, quote, a denuclearization deal?
You know, it was tragic what happened in Libya. And I don't mean Gaddafi's demise, although that was unnecessary. It was tragic. We abandoned a leader and a country that had wholeheartedly embraced the United States. I was witness to Gaddafi saying publicly, we renounce terrorism, we renounce our support for the Palestinians, we renounce our support for the Irish Republican Army, and on and on and on. And he listed all these terror groups that he was renouncing support for. He paid $2 billion in restitution to the victims of Pan Am 103, even though Libya played a minor role in that plot. I still believe, and I think there's ample evidence that the Iranians played the major role in that plot. Gaddafi didn't want to talk about that. I asked him. He said, this is in the past. This chapter is Yanni closed. And I think he was a little worried that the Iranians might actually go after him. But we did not need to abandon Gaddafi the way Hillary and Obama did. They pushed the Muslim Brotherhood. They pushed radical groups, the Al-Qaeda groups. Gaddafi was pounding the table all during that revolution in Libya saying, Qaeda, Qaeda. He was warning. He said, there's Al-Qaeda right. rising up. These are not nationalists. These are not ordinary Libyans. It's Al-Qaeda. And he was right. And they were supported by the United States of America, by Obama and Hillary. That was a tragedy. Yeah. And if Kim is taking a bad lesson from that, unfortunately, it's understandable.
That is a very tragic situation. We destabilized the region at levels that we're still not going to be able to see the full effect for years to come. Absolutely destabilized, now incurring slave trade that is coming out of Africa. It's just mind-blowing. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix. Thank you so much, Ken, for making this show a great show. Appreciate you guys listening. Don't forget, we are sponsored by Torah Learning Channel. You can find it on the internet at TorahLearningChannel.com. And until next week, Ken and Jerry and myself all say shalom. We'll see you. Happy Purim.
Can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.